For August the 7th, 2018, we talk about Donut County, the Atlas of Video Game Cities, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 256. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. So I have to give a little bit of a warning here at the outset. So you know, before you move, you take stock of what you have in your fridge and your pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, okay, I want to throw away as little of this as possible. But, you know, sometimes you have stuff that's been there for a while and you don't necessarily eat this anymore.
Some spring cleaning in that refrigerator.
Yeah. But it's, you end up with something like, in my case, it is usually pretty good to have like some kind of pasta around, you know, just because that is, you know, just something to have. It's, you know, it goes with lots of stuff. So I made spaghetti for dinner. I made myself, you know, just I took some crushed tomatoes and, you know, some meat and made a little quick sauce and everything. But I try not to eat things that are like a meal that is primarily carb. You know, I'm not like
you're gonna get sleepy.
So I feel like I have taken like a pasta diazepine or something like that. Like, so it's, yeah, no, like, so I've got just like a plate full of pastas sitting in the mess and just sitting like a brick in my stomach, thinking, yeah, that was spaghetti. It was good and maybe worth it. But then I'm sitting down to record and it's like, oh no. So that's what we're dealing with right now.
This makes me wonder what's going on in your world.
What were you gonna say, Ben?
This makes me want to look up a podcast per capita by country to see if there's like a decline in Italy in podcast output.
Yep. Oh, so I just wanted to get that out here right now. That is really, really my story, but so happy to have you here. What's going on, Jala?
It's been raining and I've been training some folks because we are teaching people all the time. And basically, there were some adventures about the training people when the rain was going on. So at the park where we teach people, or at least the ones that I was helping with, the first time it was raining, one of the two pavilions was taken over by goat yoga. Goat yoga. So you do yoga with a bunch of goats in a pen and they eat your clothes, shit and pee on your mat and then jump on your back when you're trying to do stuff.
Is this a sex thing?
No. People pay money for it and they do it because they want to pet goats, but they do not realize that they have to do yoga and shit and pee.
Yeah.
And so that was going on at one of the pavilions, so we had to cram everybody under one pavilion, and there were a lot of people that showed up, and that was fun. So we were, like, in sardines, like, basically sardines, and we had to totally adjust. And it was one of the other new trainers who was leading that one, and she almost didn't make it because of, like, she's a new, like, she has one kid, and then she just recently gave birth to a second child, and the older of the two got sick in the middle of the night. So, like, it was an adventure to see who was going to show up to lead, if it was just going to be me or what.
Right, you know? Right.
And so that was Saturday. And then today, today is Labor Day, and we had one on Labor Day, too. It was also pouring rain. Well, this time, one of the other trainers was leading it, and she set it up under the pavilion where the goats were, so there was still goat shit everywhere because they didn't clean it.
What?
They didn't clean the pavilion. They put all the picnic tables back and there was shit on the ground still.
What terrible citizenship. Oh my god.
Yeah, but by the time I realized that she was, you know, like, by the time I got there and was helping her, you know, she had already set up all of her stuff under the pavilion with the goat poop. And so I was like, oh no. So we were trying to, like, she had like a giant squeegee thingy And so we were trying to like squeegee and squish the poop out of the pavilion. And then basically we just didn't do anything on the ground.
Yeah.
We did all standing exercises.
Because people would have been sick.
Yeah. So that was what we had to do. We had to fight for fight the goats for the ability to train under the pavilion in the rain.
There has to be a better way to get to like hang out with a goat than to go do yoga in a place.
Go to a petting zoo.
Yeah.
That's a better way of doing it.
I'm sure.
Or just swap it up for puppies.
Go to a farm. Yeah. Or you can actually just own a goat. I mean, you can do that. That's fine.
Yeah. Call them lawnmowers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
No.
So
I don't know. Maybe I'm projecting too much of my own life on this, but like, you know, there are people I know who have goats, and if I wanted to go see the goat, I would just give them a call and they would say, yeah, come and pet my goat.
Like, yeah, it's fine. Please do.
It's an admirable thing. Like, goats are fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sure. And then what's ironic is that one of my other, like my Spartan race buddies, did not know about this stuff going on at my end of the world. She's up in like Dallas area, and she just did goat yoga over the weekend. And I'm like, what is this?
It's the new craze that's sweeping the nation.
Yeah. Just like in a Bermuda Triangle where nothing but goat yoga everywhere.
Like, it's like a Mandela effect kind of thing. You just woke up in a different universe where this was the thing.
Well, it was storming, guys. It could have happened.
Yeah. The veil could have been thin.
Yeah. So other than that, like the client that commissioned that last painting of the of her daughter with the elephant, got it framed and sent a photo over to me of the, you know, completed framing job and all of that, which was very nice.
Nice. So,
yeah. But anyway, those are my adventures. What's going on in Ben's world?
The world of Ben. Ben meets world. Not much. I had a trip this last weekend. I went to Cincinnati for a wedding. It was surprisingly, which is where most of us went to college. And there's a really nice bed and breakfast on the end of Ohio, which I had never been to before. And that's where the wedding was, and it overlooked downtown Cincinnati. So it was like a nice little nook. Super pretty.
Yeah. That's where at the end of Ohio by that park.
Yeah, by Bellevue Park.
Yeah.
It's if instead of going in there, you take a left down that street, it's like at the end of the street.
Yeah, there was a Three Doors Down video filmed there. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, just do a search for Three Doors Down Cincinnati, and you'll see like it's what's his name, Jimmy Three Doors standing on the roof of that like weird like cement structure kind of thing, and like him running around Cincinnati like between different neighborhoods like within a cut while he sings about the troops or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I also started watching The Good Place, and I really liked how in episode one they call Cincinnati the averagest city.
Yeah, we should go on. There should be a medium place for medium people like Cincinnati. Yeah. Yeah. and people who have taken Cincinnati in as their own, anybody I've talked to who has seen that, they're like, yeah, that totally makes, yeah.
I don't know. I always say that Cincinnati is the most underrated city, but then I also try to not say that too much because I don't want people going to Cincinnati and making it too expensive. So
yes, there is. I mean, like you've seen this happen in Austin, right? Like, there is something, there is something very nice about a well-kept secret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So edit this all out.
Don't worry, I will.
Starting with the Three Door Down music video.
No, it'll just be 3 minutes of static. I'll remember to all do right. that.
All right.
Cool. Well, we've got the regular kind of show for you. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. We have two game announcements and kind of a more in-depth thing about an older game. Ben, what is going on with the Subnautica folks?
Yeah, so I think we've talked about maybe rumors of this. I think we talked about a DLC for Subnautica coming out, taking place like in an Arctic theme or whatever. Mm-hmm. The game company, I think it's called Unknown Worlds, announced recently, if not today, that it's going to be a standalone game. So it's going to be called Subnautica Below Zero. They're working on it right now. In a few weeks or months, they're going to open it up for early access so that people can play the game, give feedback, and then they're going to kind of tweak the game based on that, as they did with the original game.
Hmm.
And then they also, one thing that was interesting is they included a link to their Trello board, which shows like their active development of the game. So it has like issues that they're tracking right now and trying to fix.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware that there's like possible spoilers if you like look at this, since some of the things might have like important parts of the game, I guess.
Yeah. I love this when any kind of dev just makes their Trello public.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really sweet. Not that like, it's not like the government where they need transparency or anything like that, but yeah, it's like cool to kind of get a peek behind the curtain, you know.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, website looks pretty sweet too. They have like some pictures and stuff of possible like new things. It looks like they're porting over a lot of the old things. Like there's still like a prawn vehicle, still like a cyclops looking vehicle, still a sea moth looking vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have one vehicle which is kind of like a almost like a hover-like craft that goes on top of the ice, it looks like.
Yeah, like a crawler, yeah.
Yeah, and that looks sweet.
That's really interesting, the idea of adding above land, above water, kind of aspects to it. Yes, yeah. But I mean, I don't know, like all of this art, like these concepts and things, like it's super spooky, the idea of being beneath the ice and kind of having the ceiling with the craggy spires or fingers of ice reaching down.
Yeah.
It seems like it'll be real, real oppressive.
Yeah. I think the other thing they announced too is they said that they might be adding a mechanic for like playing around with heat in the water, so like being able to melt things, I guess.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, otherwise they're keeping most of the mechanics, the same mechanics, where there's going to be base building and stuff like that, and even like one of the current things they're fixing is they're trying to make a maximum height for the base building that you can do above the water. So I don't know. It seems really cool. So I'm excited about this. I don't think I'm going to do the early access though. I want to wait until the game is like released proper and then play it then. Cause that's what I did with the main Subnautica. And that was pretty, pretty good experience. So
there's plenty of stuff to play in the meantime.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So adding heat to water, I can tell without looking at the Trello, hot tubs confirmed. The most relaxing underwater terror simulator yet. Cool. I've got a quick one here. PAX was here recently. One of the big things that came out of either that or the Paris game show, one of the two, was the announcement of Spelunky 2. The sequel to a game that's been around for a very long time. We've talked about it quite a bit. Lots of other podcasts have spoken about Spelunky and lauded its kind of mechanical intricacy and, you know, held it up as a really good example of indie platformer design. This is being made by the same guy, has a similar graphical style. And it is actually kind of interestingly, you are playing as the main character's daughter. So you're kind of following in his footsteps after he passes away.
Oh
yeah,
sounds sweet.
That'll appeal to all those dads out there. And those uncles. And
this is also kind of like taking a page from like Lara Croft, right?
Maybe. I mean the character looks, and I don't know, I wouldn't want to see her go through that kind of trauma.
Sure. Yeah. Hopefully they're not taking that page from Lara Croft.
Rebar is an instant death trap. So what's interesting about this, you know, looking at previews and kind of reading first impressions of, you know, a few runs people have taken, is that it is still fundamentally, you know, a very similar game to what it was before. The changes that they're making to level generation and, you know, monsters and different kinds of tiles, they're all kind of things that are not huge steps on their own, like if you just kind of listed them out, but the way that Spelunky is put together, the fact that every mechanic interacts with every other mechanic, those subtle changes are going to cascade out into something that does feel appreciably different, is the sense that I get.
Yay!
I think this is cool. I missed out on the first Spelunky, so I'd be kind of interested in jumping on the train now.
Yeah.
I think it's on my backlog.
I wish I was better at it than I am.
Yeah. I think the first one was also in Indie Dev the Movie 2, like the sequel. So they kind of went into like what behind the scenes of the game there.
Yeah. Derek Yu, it's amazing what a one person developer development team can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can be very much more cohesive than a huge project.
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of huge projects, Jala, what did you dig up about Grim Fandango?
Well, it's not about Grim Fandango by itself. The article has an excerpt from a new book that is about Grim Fandango. Hmm. However, the book in question is called Virtual Cities, and it was pitched on the crowdfunding site Unbounded, and it was successfully funded. So the writer and the artist are working together right now on the analysis of their favorite video game locations, and that sounded very interesting to me. Oh, it also sounded like something that is right up the vein of everybody in Duck Feed Network for various reasons, because, you know, like...
Yeah. Right up the vein or right into my vein. Put it there now, please.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And so the article just has like an excerpt from the book covering Grim Fandango's Rubikava. So that's what caught my eye originally. But there's like some artwork and then just like a whole blurb, you know, section of the book about that particular you know, destination place and, mm-hmm. you know, what you need to know about that particular location in that particular game. And looks pretty cool. So, and the artwork seems to be like pen and ink with some watercolor, which is also my thing. So mm-hmm. that's cool. I'm definitely going to be interested to see this book when it comes out. So I really just brought this as a notice so people are aware. Virtual Cities is going to be a really neat thing to look at.
Yeah,
so.
Go and do a look, not just at the article that Jala posted here, but just mm-hmm. like do a search elsewhere. Like there is another one on unbound.com that has an excerpt about Half-Life 2's City 17.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the art style, the pen and watercolor style, that is very good. What specifically turns my crank is the maps. Just the idea of like doing this kind of cartography of these fictional places. Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah. And I knew you would be, and I knew that a lot of listeners would be interested in this. So it's a very short blurb, but I just had to bring it up because it just sounded too cool.
Yeah, into it. I kind of wish that I could have known about it before, so I could have pledged that that'd be neat to get.
Yeah. Well, they will. Yeah, Name a City is sold out. Cool.
Yeah. But, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. However, this time it is a free play multiplayer where it's flip-flopped. You ask us the questions here. So I am going to act as proctor for this, and we're going to get started with Greg, who says, what is a game that you loved as a kid, but now you're like, what did I ever see in this?
That's a good question.
I think I'll go with Mission Impossible for the N64 on this one. That was one that I absolutely loved as a kid. I think I went back and played it like years later and was just like, this is so, like, the mechanics are so bad on this. Like, I don't know how I could have had the patience for this game.
Yeah. That unlocked something for me. I loved the first two Siphon Filter games. Back mostly, I think, because in the second one, you could light people on fire with your taser.
You could do that in the first one.
Oh, you could? Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, no, I
never got past the first level because I just kept doing that the entire time.
Yeah. Just in this train yard, just zapping, just frying people on top of trains. Mm-hmm. I've gone back to them, and I feel like the PlayStation is a particularly ripe era for that kind of, like, wait a minute, what were we all thinking?
It's kind of like how in the 80s they used the synthesizer. This was like a lot of experimentation in 3D gaming, and some of the things just weren't quite there.
Right.
Yeah, see, I guess if I'm going to have to say something like that it would be something like Virtual On, because like I played Virtual On, and that's like a robot fighting game, and I wasn't exactly very good at it, but like I guess it was just because it was 3D and it was robots, and I was like, this is pretty neat, but I never really like it, doesn't look good, and to go yeah. back to it, like it plays all right, I guess, but mm-hmm. it's not great, you know. And I had even seen it in an old arcade when I went to one like a couple of years ago, and I played it in the arcade too, and I'm like, it's not any better in arcade. Like, I don't know, I really liked it for some reason, so I guess just because, you know, like it was new, it was a new thing.
Yeah, Virtual On was like Afterburner or like Daytona USA, where like the game itself is kind of the appeal of the game itself is inseparable from the appeal of the installation.
Yeah,
like the home version of Daytona USA is pointless.
Yeah, and I played the shit out of that too. Yeah. And like I don't even like racing games, and it's just like I played the shit out of that for some reason.
I was just entranced by the music.
Yeah, I guess so. Daytona.
Let's roll away.
Yeah.
Oh man, rolling start.
Yes, rolling start.
Yeah. Oh man. Julia writes, should all games have the option of selecting a tutorial mode within the first hour of play? Or where does wiki diving / mystery truly add value? This question is inspired by Dead Cells, Chasm, and The Binding of Isaac.
Okay.
Is that a two-part question, or is that all one really long question?
I think it is all one very long question. So the last part was just saying like, oh, these are the games here. You know, should games have tutorials? Should, you know, even ones that you opt into, or is there value in keeping it purposefully obscure so you have to look elsewhere or discern it yourself? So I'd like to break it down, which is more appealing to you in a game, mystery or tutorialization or transparency?
Don't ever put a tutorial in my face. I hate them.
not even a, would you like to learn about plop, or would you rather them just impart the information in a different way?
I never look at those ever. Yeah. If you give me the option, I will decline. I hate it. Now, if you have it where it's like built, we've talked about the tutorials before because we had that multiplayer about tutorials,
right?
Where, you know, when it's done right and it's streamlined into the play in such a way that it's not irritating if you've already gone through the game before to go through the start of the game again, like if it's built in because it is just the, you know, the way that the levels ramp up introduces new factors for you to learn. You know, how to combine elements that you already have at your disposal, or if it's just like a little thing that pops up over to the side that you don't have, like that doesn't stop the gameplay and make you go through a menu or something. Like if it just pops up and says push whatever to do this thing, then that's fine. And especially if I can turn that off, like I won't turn it off the first time I play it. I will leave those there the first time I play it. But then every subsequent playthrough, that shit's turning off, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like having an option.
Yeah, so. I think I would say, like, I wouldn't take a hard line either direction and say all games should do this or all do this. Varies game to game. The ones that I'm thinking of is, like, and this is in my mind, and this will probably be a couple of answers. I just saw a game design conference speech on Portal 2 where they were talking about the design of that game. And, like, that game in Portal 1, like, the first half of both those games are tutorials for just to make sure the player's up to speed with, like, all the mechanics and how they work. So, like that's obviously one that's good and, like, extremely well done. Like, kind of one that you're talking about, Jala, where it's, like, you play that one multiple times and it's still good. Some of the painful ones are, like, Rockstar ones where it's just, like, screenshot of, like, here's what you need to press. Like, here's what you need to do or whatever. So I don't know. I think there's some value for some games of like hiding the mechanics and like the user being able to figure them out. Some games don't need to have that though. And some games can just like blatantly just tell you what you need to do up front. Like for example, like Braid or The Witness, where it just tells you like the controls right off the bat. So you know what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, I to be realistic, I think that's more my answer too. Like it really depends upon how it's done and what the purpose is in the game. Like, you know, what the game is going for, you know?
Yeah. I think that it's hard to paint with a very, very broad brush, because if you say there should be no kind of internal documentation about the way something functions, then what you are saying is games can only ever be as complex as a user could possibly figure out through, yeah, you know, nonverbal things, you know, just by messing around. And I don't know that I'm comfortable setting that kind of ceiling on game, yeah, complexity. Right.
Well, and then too, okay, you've got a Mario and then you've got a Dead Cells.
Yeah.
Which one needs a tutorial?
I mean, neither.
But like my whole point is, like, if one is going to be more complex and, you know, just its mechanics are far more complex, like, okay, if you have some kind of a card deck building game, you probably need a tutorial for that, you know, probably at least a limited one, because there are people who will come into that game who don't play card building, deck building games, mm-hmm, and need to know what the hell they're doing, you know, that kind of a thing. And that would be an optional tutorial situation, you know?
Yeah.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that every game should strive to make their tutorials as uninterruptive as possible. Like, it, yes, is, it is unacceptable that we are still getting that now, yes, when as far back as, I don't know, just picking a date, 1996 with the Super Mario RPG, they had a character ask, do you want to know this or do you just want to play the game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Mai writes, ignoring the rather questionable history of video games adapted into movies or shows, what video game would you most like to see adapted into a TV series, animated, or live action is your choice?
I'd say instead of revamping Star Trek, just do a Mass Effect and just have the same storyline. That would be sweet.
Oh, there you go. That would be something.
Yeah. How about you, Jala?
Lunar!
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's already half movie anyway. So.
Half anime. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got all them cutscenes in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just going to go with a boring answer. Like, give me like a Tales from the Dark Side anthology series about different kind of Silent Hill things.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's uninspired, I know, but.
No, it's true to your heart.
Yeah, that's true. I like to at least throw a little bit of a curveball, as opposed to just like have people like, okay, what's Cole's answer this going to be?
I answered with the most obvious thing I would ever say.
You can play Dark Souls or Silent Hill with Cole. Which one will it be?
Yeah. Well, it's tough, right? Because, you know, we talk about this on Adaptation Decay quite a bit. It's like, okay, does this, you know, is there something about this that needs to be a video game in order to function? Right. And yeah, there are excellent things, like, you know, in my head, I was thinking like, oh, Pathologic is a really, really good story that I would like people to experience. Like, well, no, that has to be a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about?
Steven writes, what are you drinking and how's the weather?
I'm not drinking a damn thing. I literally don't even have a drink in here. What? I had some tea earlier. I had herbal tea.
Mm.
I had blueberry tea earlier. And then it's storming.
Mm.
We talked about that.
Yes. I am drinking. It is. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it is also storming here since I'm only 3 hours away from Jala. And I'm not drinking a beer yet, but I will be after the break.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a Parks and Rec by Zilker.
What? There's a beer called Parks and Rec?
Yeah.
Is it themed after the show? Is it sweet and heartwarming? Okay.
It's a reference by using the exact same name.
Yes. or what we call intellectual property theft. Yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm drinking a bottle of water. That's what I'm drinking. And it has been storming, but, you know, it's been a while since I've like had beer on the show or something like that. Not a
hydrate.
Not really a thing that I do anymore. Oh fuck, I overhydrate. Lindsay,
well, it's summer still, right? And if you go outside, you melt, right?
I mean, a little bad. I can be out there, you know, somewhat. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you always talk about how you don't like the heat. So
right. I do not care for the warmth. Yeah, and it's
why you're moving north.
Yes. Yeah, where the summers are usually about like 5 degrees cooler. if my little desktop widgets are to be believed. Lindsay writes, we all have that game from our childhood that either we would love to play today or still play today. What is that game that stands the test of time for you?
Bubble Bobble!
That's a good one.
And also Legend of Zelda, the very first one. I always play that. Like, I play both of those two. I get into this weird snit where I just want to play one of them and I'll go through the entire thing. Usually with Bubble Bobble, I find unwitting souls who have never played it before. Mm-hmm. And then I have them go through, like, you know, have food, you know, usually have like some kind of a drink, mm-hmm. like a beverage of some sort. And then we will sit and play the game all 100 levels. So
sounds like a good night.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Mega Man X.
Ooh, yay.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, anytime.
Mega Man X is the reason we met, Cole.
That's true. Yeah, watch out for fireballs.
Episode one.
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah, I was their first fan mail. Woo!
I'll say this answer from... Oh, yeah? Nice. I'll say this one from recent memory. Over the weekend with the groom who was in the wedding we played Smash Brothers on the N64. And we played co-op, like we were playing against bots for most of the time. And then we did one final game where it was every man for himself. And I was Donkey Kong, he was Ness. We got down to one life versus one life. I had over 100%. I threw him off the ledge. He did his up B to come back on, and I hit the thing. And then he fell and died. And it was great. And it's like you have that much drama like 20 years after the game came out.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Oh, man. Bottom of the ninth base is loaded. Yeah. And then Ness is there. Well, you weren't Ness. Yeah. Baseball bat and such. let's see here. Danny says, would you rather have to listen to Deckard Cain narrate your life and describe every single person and animal you encounter for a year, or have GLaDOS make fun of you for 6 months? Only you can hear either of them. Deckard Cain from the Diablo series of games.
Kind of a... I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't play Diablo, so somebody will have to tell me. Otherwise, I'll just have to default to GLaDOS. Well, GLaDOS is just funny anyway. I like GLaDOS. It's
yeah. Fine. I mean, like, so, okay, let's phrase it this way. Would you rather have a gruff man describe in overdramatic terms every time you butter your toast? Or would you rather...
That sounds great.
Would you rather have your own personal Dick's Last Resort following you around for half that time?
I don't know. They're both really good. Damn.
Who would speak more frequently? Like, I feel like GLaDOS would make fun of you like once every 15 minutes, maybe, and then let you like think about stuff in the meantime. But
that's true.
I feel like Deckard Cain wouldn't know when to stop.
Well, the thing is that like that from what you're telling me, that just that my mental equivalent is like listening to Meatloaf, you know, for hours and hours is overdramatic. Overdramatic. Oh my God, that would actually like that would probably wreck my brain after a while. Like I would just be ruined after that. Yeah. I'm already dramatic enough as it is in my responses to things. Could you imagine if I had that happening?
Yeah, can we have a third option and listen out of months on loop?
what was that, Ben? You kind of cut out there.
I said, can we have a third option where we have to listen to Bat Out of Hell for 3 months? Because I would do that.
Yeah,
I would do that for sure. That makes me giggle.
Oh, man.
Whatever. They're all good. I like it.
I would take GLaDOS because she'd be funnier. And also, it's half the time. I think that if I'm going to have that kind of distraction, you know, having the time would be worth the tonal difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. David writes, favorite music/rhythm game.
I've only played one, so Persona 4 Dancing All Night is my answer, because that's the only one I've played.
Have you seriously never played a Rock Band or Guitar Hero?
No.
Huh. Okay.
When I played Persona 4 Dancing All Night, I told you that was like my first actual time playing a rhythm game.
Okay.
I wasn't kidding. Like, I really haven't ever done it before, guys.
Yeah, I believe you.
Does GTA Vice City count as a music game?
I don't know. Let's say that.
In that one then. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say Rock Band 2. Man, that's tough. Yeah, I'd say Rock Band 2.
What about Beatles Rock Band?
That doesn't have enough legs on it. It's really, really good, but yeah, doesn't have enough legs.
Okay.
No, Rock Band 3, because it does the pro instruments, and I like that quite a bit. I like the pro drum.
The thing about Beatles Rock Band is I think it has the highest floor quality to any of the Rock Band games.
Yeah, like if you fire up Rock Band 2 and you put it on random, like, you're gonna get that lit song, My Own Worst Enemy. Like, whereas you can just play Beatles on random and it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although you do get that one weird remix from the Across the Universe soundtrack that, Tomorrow Never Knows.
Isn't it a Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, love. Sorry, I got my weird unnecessary Beatles licenses mixed up.
I want to go on a brief aside and say, like, I didn't start listening to the Beatles until late, and so I saw Across the Universe before I listened to a lot of Beatles.
Oh no!
And so I was like, oh, great. Really like the movie or whatever, listen to a bunch of Beatles and watch the movie like 5 years later. I'm like, oh, this is terrible.
The worst. Maybe not the worst, but who knows? What were we going to say?
We don't need to talk about Across the Universe. We can just go on.
It's not like that's not even a very good Beatles song either. Yeah. Juan says, what treasured game or media have you tried to introduce to your significant other or a friend that didn't resonate as deeply with them?
The Witness with Jala.
I haven't picked it up again since the insight that you gave me last time. And whenever I do, if I can contact you to be my Sherpa and keep me from wandering away too many times and talk to me some, then maybe I'll get somewhere in that.
All right, I'll put an asterisk on that answer then. So that's like a maybe.
This is tough. Like, you know, you are all my closest friends, and so the Jala's rejection of VLR still kind of stings. I know we make it a joke.
Everybody has to point at me today.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, both of you are pointing at me. I would say, like, and with right reasoning, you know, the times that I have tried to get people into, say, Shining Force 3 now, because it's a Sega Saturn game, it's really old, and there are so many games that have better mechanics at this juncture and look better, but, like, the story is still really awesome, but, like, you know, it is not that it plays badly, but it's clunkier, you know, so getting, trying to get people into Shining Force 3 or Lunar, like, the people that I've had play Lunar, they like it, but it's not the same as, like, I'm 12 years old playing this game and my family is moving and I'm all alone and I'm having to meet new people and there's this story about faith and power and whatever, and, you know, like, all this other stuff that just, like, hits me right at the time I need to when I'm a tender youngin', you know, like, nobody's gonna replace that feeling. Like, I will still watch those cutscenes and be like sniffles. So
like anything like that, you're asking, you're not just asking somebody to re-rack their assumptions about what would fly in a way a game is developed, but also to bring, like you're saying, like, your exact biographical.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't go into showing people Lunar expecting them to, you know, have the kind of reaction I do. They usually are like, oh yeah, it's pretty good, you know, but that's about it. Yeah. And then, like, but really more so, I would say Shining Force 3, trying to get people to play Shining Force 3 is hard. It's because of the era it came out during, even though it has a really good and complex story and everything, because one part was released in America, the other two parts were not, so you have to get a translation of it and play imported copies. Like, it's just a whole rigmarole that nobody has to do with Shining Force 1 or 2, you know? So,
Eric writes, what game did you initially get turned off of, but revisit and discover that you liked it? Maybe there's a game that you like to play, but there was something that you were initially, or maybe are still, repelled by. For me personally, like, everybody knows the Dark Souls example. Here's kind of a weird one. I didn't really care for Grand Theft Auto 3 until I sat down and played it with other people watching. And then that made it click for me in a real kind of way. So this is like going and looking back, but I just didn't see the appeal until it was like, oh, this is wide open and we have input as to, like, go and do this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I've come back to games after a while and then liked them better many times, actually. Mm-hmm. I like two games that I remember from when I was little that I really like. I still name them as two of my favorite games that I bounced the hell off of the first time I played both of them, and then the second time on one of them, were Azure Dreams and Digimon Card Battle, because they both have these egregiously long tutorials, and we know how I feel about tutorials.
See the aforementioned.
Now, but like, they are complex games that require a tutorial, but the way that the tutorial is designed is too much of a slog, and it takes too long. So, you know, that is unfortunate. But I did manage to get past that and actually play the game and actually enjoy those games. But otherwise, like, it's not really that I go back and play them again and then, you know, think about them differently. I think sometimes it's more a matter of I've had some time to sit and think about it. And then, like, even if I settled at, like, a middle place with it or even towards the dislike, mm-hmm. Maybe later on I... You know, maybe because, you know, memory becomes rosy after a while and you start forgetting some of the bad shit. Yeah. Like, with, say, for example, Danganronpa.
Yeah.
I almost threw my Vita when I played that game. But then when I went back and talked about it, like, you know, what was it, 3 months ago or something, I was talking about it in a little bit more detail and remembering things. And I'm like, you know, overall, I remember I was actually kind of digging, like, you know, a good portion of that game, and I knocked it out real fast.
Yeah.
It's just the ending that made me really mad. And, like, mm-hmm. I ended up ending on a sour note on that game, but then going, you know, thinking back to it, I was like, oh, actually, that was okay. And I did the same thing with, you know, like, other games recently. I had one on the tip of my tongue, but, yeah. Well, even Persona 4. Even Persona 4 Golden, mm-hmm. like, I was mad and I was just exhausted by the end of that game because it was 95 hours. 95 hours, guys!
Yeah, well, and also you played 40 of it over the course of a couple of days. Couple of days when you were sick, too. So there's that association.
Yeah, and so, like, especially now that I'm playing Shin Megami Tensei, mm-hmm. like, I look at Persona 4 and I'm like, that one's actually pretty decent. I mean... I don't know that I ever want to play 95 hours of that game again, but you know,
yeah,
like, now I can look at it differently.
Yeah. Time and distance make high points snap together like magnets.
Yeah.
You know, but just all of the meh is kind of compressed away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben.
I think I've mentioned this one before on air, but when I was in college, I started playing Metal Gear Snake Eater and kind of bounced off of it just because mm-hmm. the controls seemed like somewhat difficult, and I wasn't really used to the scheme, but then some of my roommates got really into it, kind of showed me how to play it, and then I fell in love with it from there, got the Infinity Gun, so, yeah.
Nice. Let's see, Sam writes, what is a game or a series that you like playing if you've had a few drinks? If there are any teetotalers, pretend I said coffee, pop, or chocolate milk. It's Mario or Contra for me. And yes, I typed this on my phone at a bar. I had a long weekend. We all had a long weekend. It's Labor Day weekend.
Well, not everybody. There are people who have to work.
That's true. And I guess, yeah. so that is true. I didn't mean to make assumptions. For me, the only game series that I associate with drinking is Rock Band. Sorry to use that for two different things. But yeah, it is fun to get a little bit in your cups and sit down and feel like you're playing music.
Mm-hmm.
I like to play, I like to play a game with Sam when mm-hmm. I'm drinking, because it's a lot of fun to just, you know, like, you know, Sam is so incredibly patient with me, and then, like, you know, it's fun to just, like, co-op with him and Greg and Briar and just, you know, do some, I've not done that in, like, months. Mm-hmm. I am so sad, but, like, it's just, unfortunately, right now I'm just crazy busy and I just don't have time, but, yeah. like, you know, I love doing that, and that's a thing I can do with or without alcohol. I don't really need to, but, you know, I kind of associate playing, like, Resident Evil 5 and 6 with Sam, because we did both of those, and then we streamed a chunk of that, or all of that, I don't remember, a couple of years ago. And for that, I was like, okay, I need a drink. So that was fun. But yeah, mostly co-op. You know, Mount Your Friends is funny when you've been drinking.
Mm-hmm.
you know, any kind of shooter team game, like playing Left 4 Dead or something when you're drinking, gets a lot funnier. Night Squad, that's another one that's fun. I talked about that once. Don't ask me what that is. It's like a little indie game with a bunch of like versus stuff. So yeah, stuff like anything co-op, really. I like that better than drinking by myself and playing a game.
Yeah, see, that's therein lies the rub. Yeah.
I would say if it's only a few drinks, basically any multiplayer game, adding a few drinks is like can make it better. I don't know if one jumps out more than the other. Things like Rocket League or like a shooter game or whatever. No. If you've had like more than a few drinks, then I think Jackbox is great to play.
That's a good one.
Space. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think of like a blanket or umbrella answer for this for me would be arcades in general have been changed mm-hmm. fundamentally for me with the addition of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. There's like maybe one or two arcades, but they're far away from me from where I live. So like, you know, also I don't know a lot of people that go to barcades here.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So like, I don't have any people to go with. They're all like fitness people.
Are you telling me that Houston isn't a public transit city?
Oh, hell no, it's not.
Yeah. Allison has a very good question here. If you could erase the memory of playing one game so that you could experience it again for the first time, what would it be?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I would not do something that's too old, because if I played it now, it wouldn't seem as good. So, like, I wouldn't do anything like Shadow of the Colossus or earlier. I think the answer I would give for this is probably like Portal 2, even though that's something I said before. I think that one still like stands up as a modern game, and it would be excellent to experience again for the first time.
Here's mine. I would like to play VLR again.
Yeah.
This time to see, you know, like if maybe this time would be, you know, a different timeline entirely, and I'm actually fine with the game now with my, you know, so... I'm not going to go play it again because it's already wrecked for me. However, you know, if it was totally wiped from my memory, it might have a chance.
Or you would experience it all anew, and then that would be very entertaining.
And everybody would have fun listening to it, yes.
Yes. I like how we've had 12 or so questions so far, and somehow we have managed to answer with the same games.
Yeah.
So for me, even though I think that The Witcher 3 is a stronger game in pretty much every regard and does everything this game did better, I would still say Mass Effect 2.
Ooh.
My first exposure to that was such an explosive kind of moment for me, like just from the very beginning pretty much to the very end, like everything about the way that game is structured, the characters that you get to know in that game. Mass Effect 2 would be a huge one for me.
All right, so thinking about this answer, this means that in your mind you would have played Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 3, and then Mass Effect 2.
I guess I would. So let's assume that it's inclusive. Assume that I'm going into it only with my kind of knowledge of Mass Effect 1 up to that point. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. If I can bend the rules so far.
Otherwise, it would be a very weird storyline for a lot of the characters that you meet.
Who is...
Like, oh, I saw you guys all die. That's weird.
Tim writes, what is the biggest game series that you have never touched at all? For me, it's probably Assassin's Creed.
I've touched a lot. Like I've avoided a lot of mainline game series, or like played a very, very small bit. Like Fallout, I played a very small bit. I've never played a Mass Effect game. I have never played Halo. I can go on. There's a lot of stuff I missed.
Yeah.
So, but that's because like I had that hiatus where I wasn't playing games for like, I don't know, 5+ years, because my ex had taken all of the systems and mm-hmm. I just didn't buy new ones. Yeah. And then like I started playing games again when I got a PC. Mm-hmm. So.
I'll say Fortnite or Overwatch. I haven't touched either of those, and those are both pretty big games right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I have an answer for this.
Well, you know, you are like head of a network about video games. It's okay if you don't have an answer for this one.
Yeah. It's really tough for me. Like going through a roll call of all these huge series in my head, I feel like I've at least, you know, dabbled with a little bit of them. Like there are some that I came to incredibly late. Like I had never played a Quest for Glory game until we did one for WoW, you know, and that was like a 5-entry-long game series that was pretty big that ran for like a decade. Yeah. So yeah, I'm probably gonna have to abstain from that one.
Okay.
Noah gives her a final one here. Which Legend of Zelda temple was the hardest in the whole series?
I haven't played the whole series, I don't know.
Yeah. Same boat. I've only played like a couple of the games and not all of them, so I don't know if I'm equipped to give an answer. But yeah.
Answer for all of us.
The hardest of the subs that I've played is probably the Water Temple from Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give that answer. I know that's basic, but yeah, that's the only one that kind of sticks out. There was a Water Temple in pretty much any of the Water Temples, actually. Anything with movable water levels. There was a water level in Link's Awakening that for some reason had a bug built into it where you could make the game unwinnable if you jumped across a thing at a wrong time and saved, which is like, it's ridiculous to think that would make its way into a Zelda game, but it totally did. So yeah, I would say if that counts, then that one. But yeah, Water Temple on original N64, given the way that it works and given the way things are signaled. Yeah.
I would say making a game unwinnable makes it a pretty hard temple. So yeah.
Yes. and that is I believe all of the questions that we have. I need to stop looking at these virtual on cabinets because it's a very neat cabinet. Thank you everybody for participating. If you want to participate in these, just go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Something that I've noticed is that this is the most efficient combination. I think that this is not an observation on anything except for the fact that our episodes end up going very quickly. I think that we're all business all the time, maybe.
I was just gonna say, yeah, that's one way to look at it, or like we're the least interactive, like we care the least. Follow-up questions at all. I don't think that's true, but
no. Yeah. There's been back and forth and stuff. It's just very strange to observe those dynamics over the course of, you know, X number of years.
We have the least sides.
in the break, Jala declared it so that Ben will go first. So Ben, what have you been playing over the past week or so?
Yeah, I actually got two new games, so excited to talk about this. I know. So the first game I got is Donut County, which I think we've mentioned once or twice in like news stories.
Hmm.
It's a game where you play as a black hole, and it's kind of like a puzzle game where you pick up stuff and suck it in. And as you suck stuff in, it gets bigger and bigger, so you can suck bigger stuff in. So it has a gameplay that's very similar to Katamari Damacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really short game. It's 10% off right now, and it was made by the publisher was Annapurna Games, which is like a movie company that's also trying to do.
Yeah, they did.
We talked about Annapurna Games before because of something I brought to the level, and I don't remember what.
Yeah, they publish. They've been doing games for a while. They did Unfinished Swan, yeah. And then also What Remains of Edith Finch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was something else about Annapurna. It's going to bother me now, but I don't remember when I talked about it. But anyway, you can also get it on the App Store for your iPhone, apparently. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, okay.
Hot damn.
The developer of the game is Ben Esposito, and he also worked on, I think, What Remains of Edith Finch, and I think also The Unfinished Swan and a couple other games. So the premise of the game is the two main characters is a girl and a raccoon who are friends. And the raccoon works at a donut store, and anytime somebody orders a donut, he instead sends a black hole and sucks up all their stuff, including them. And so the narrative is very, like, I don't know, very, it, the narrative made me feel old, because it's like, it's very, I don't know, it's like, it's kind of like, absurdist to some degree, but it's very, like, they use a lot of, like, young hip language, like, you text with one another, there's no voiceover at all, it's all, like, text that you're reading, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The game is not bad. I think one limitation with the game is there's only the one core mechanic of the black hole, but you're somewhat limited with the space that you're using it in. So you only have an option. You only have an option of like maybe 20 things that you can suck up, and so you just do it in ascending order of size. It's not like Katamari Damacy where you have this large open world that you have like full range to explore in. There are some puzzle mechanics, and they do kind of mix up the how you use the black hole. Like there's one level where you can consume a thing of fire, and so then heat radiates out of the black hole, and then you can use that to interact with things. There's one where you can suck up water, and it becomes like a pool that can't suck up anything, but so you have to kind of figure out a way for something to use the water. So there's like a few things that kind of try and I guess embellish or do a riff on the core mechanic. But largely I didn't think it was a very challenging puzzle game, so I was a little bit disappointed in that aspect of it. It's also a pretty short game. It's only 2 hours long. So it's not a terrible game. It's not bad. The production value is really good on it. Like the animation is great, and the writing's not bad, even though it did feel kind of out of my wheelhouse. I just think that I think right now it's selling on Steam for $13, and it was on sale for like 10% off. I think I would buy this. I think this would be a good value at like a $5 game. But
well, guess what? It's $5 on iOS.
Yep, and I just bought it, and I'm going to download it when I'm not using bandwidth to talk to you all.
All right. Well, then you can confirm or deny whether or not it's good for a $5 value. Then there's some good. The writing. There is some good parts of the writing where it's set in kind of like a fictional version of LA. So there's some interesting things going with that where it's like, I don't know. I guess I don't want to go too much into it, especially if you're going to play it with who the bad guys are, I guess. But but yeah, I don't know. It's not a bad puzzle game, but it's not like amazing either, I guess. Anyway.
I like the idea of kind of a bespoke kind of narrative Katamari inspired thing. That seemed cool to me.
It does have much, it does lean more on narrative than Katamari does over gameplay mechanics. So,
I'm curious as to whether or not I would feel old or not. Cause you know, we had that talk the last time about adulting.
I don't know. I'm definitely interested to hear what your opinion on either of you guys' opinions on the game are if you guys play it in the next week. So,
My gaming is mobile right now, so this is actually coming at a very good time for me.
Sweet.
Great.
All right. So, yeah, I'm good with putting a pin in it for now and then revisiting it later in a week or two.
Ben is busy, though. This is the first time I've looked at his kind of portfolio. He's had his hands on a lot of stuff that is, like, right up my alley. Not just What Remains of Edith Finch, but he's associated with Arcane Kids. So, like, he did Bubsy 3D, Bubsy Visit the James Turrell exhibit, and also Sonic Dreams Collection, kind of those joke games, Room of a Thousand Snakes. And also, I had no idea he was involved in one of my favorite web things of all time, really, that ended up being really useful for Bonfireside Chat, made a website called Ambient Dark Souls, which was a place where you could click around and hear the ambient noise, like field recordings from inside, like different zones in Dark Souls.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, this guy is kind of great. So, yeah.
All right. Well, don't let him replace me as your favorite Ben. But
okay, no, it's he's got an uphill battle, Ben.
All right. Yeah. Okay. The other game I've been playing, which I've only played a little bit, I just started today, is a game called Black the Fall. It's like a independent like Unity game, I assume it's an independent game. It's kind of in the style of like Stalker. It's set in like a kind of dystopian Russian society. And you're playing as somebody who looks like you're a robot to some degree, and you're trying to break out of this very, dystopian area, I guess.
You're trying. You are a robot who is trapped in the world of Inside.
Yeah. And similar to Inside, except the puzzles maybe are not as clean as Inside, but I mean that's something that you can say of almost every game besides Inside. but the game looks really good, and the puzzles aren't bad. They're like they're interesting, and like, for example, the puzzles in this game were more rewarding and more interesting than the gameplay that I got in Donut County. Mm-hmm. Even only playing it for like 30 minutes right now. The art style is also like really, really good, and really interesting. It feels like kind of samey as a lot of other games, where it's like very things like, you know, like if you cross into an area, a gun will shoot you and kill you. So it feels very similar to like something like Limbo and Inside. But the aesthetic, I think, is really good right now. And I'm still interested in it.
Yeah, it looks like they use the depth of the stage or the depth of the presentation, you know, the Z-axis, a little bit more than something like Inside does.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of structures that they have in the game, too, that they paid a lot of attention to. Like, there's like, for example, an elevator that you start the game in. Like, it shows all the cranks and stuff that thing, and they kind of like loop around and do like a lot of interesting things, so like that's kind of cool. Some of the, like, there's like a minecart thing in early on, and it has like a lot of moving pistons and parts and stuff. It's like that part's interesting. The game seems really cool so far, I think.
Yeah.
From an aesthetic point of view, and the puzzles are solid at least. So I'll probably continue playing that. I don't know how far I am in the game. Also, something that prompted that is it's on sale right now on Steam. So it's 40% off, so it's only $9. So, yeah.
Is there a Steam sale going on right now?
I don't think so. I think that's the only game on my list right now that had a discount. So.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, you said this was indie developed. The studio who made it is indie, but it was published by Square.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I do remember seeing that at the beginning. And is the company, or do they take place in Russia, or is the company from Russia? Because it has that aesthetic, and a lot of like the comments on the game are in Russian.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I should know this coming in, I suppose.
No, yeah. It's fine. Yeah, Sand Sailor Studio is the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it looks neat. It's kind of cool to see. It's funny because Playdead specifically made Inside, you know, in such a way that like, oh, well, everybody bit our stees with Limbo, so try and do it now with this. And then now here, a couple of years later, we're seeing something like this. Although maybe this is just more in the continuing tradition of cinematic platformers like Out of This World, you know,
mm-hmm.
or Prince of Persia, and stuff like that.
I just looked up the companies in Romania.
Hmm.
So far it looks really good, and it's made in Unity too, so that's something that I'm interested in as I'm playing it, is trying to figure out how they made some of the stuff they did.
Oh yeah, just to keep sussing out the implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neat. So that was Donut County and Black the Fall.
Yep.
Nice. Jala, tell me, well, I was going to say, tell me about Shin Megami Tensei 4, and that would sound very bossy. However, I know that's the game that you're bringing to us, so people
will think I'm like... I always responsibly tell you what I got on the plate, so you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Before I show up, even when it's last minute. Anyway, I have a cool story about me beating a thing in a really fancy way, like it was magic in the forest. So my guy was level 31, and I was wandering in Ikebukuro, and I went into a demon's domain. It was Grendel, who was level 44. I was level 31, so all of my demons were like level 29, level 30, you know? And when I was fighting him, I just went in there, and all the other demons that were in the domain were fine. Domains are basically like sealed off areas with, you know, where you don't have a map. And it's just like you go into a building, and then suddenly there's like an alternate dimension that is this demon's pocket dimension. And so we were fighting in there. And anyway, like Grendel started using this heavy physical attack that hit my entire party over and over, like everybody at once. And he got like, what, two or three turns, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And so he just kept on hitting it, and then he would get buffed from getting critical hits. And so he killed off my main guy and two of my demons, and I totally won by a stroke of luck because the last demon that was alive had 3 hit points.
Oh.
And by a freak chance, Grendel missed 2 turns in a row and then used buffs with his other ones, his other actions. And so, like, with and also my last living demon only had like 2 more uses of magic before he would be like out of magic, and then I would be totally SOL.
Right.
And anyway, like, I used that last magic attack and Grendel died, and like after those 2 turns were up, and wow, like, that was skin of my teeth. But anyway, like, moral of the story being, don't ever give up. Even if you have 3 hit points and only 2 uses of magic left, and this thing criticals you left and right, keep fighting.
The friends you made along the way were the narrow victory. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you won with friendship, is what you're saying?
Yes, the power of friendship.
That's amazing. That's like that's the kind of close call that I associate with like strategy RPGs, tactics RPGs.
Yeah, I mean, like, the last time something like this happened was like when I was playing Final Fantasy Tactics. Remember back when I was talking about how I had that one little mage guy, and he was like the only guy left, and he like one hit would have killed him, and somehow he managed to beat everybody up. You know, like, he went, you know, in just enough time and managed to critical or something. Win the map.
I live for that shit.
Yeah. So that was really exciting. And that was the exciting thing. And so, like, my tendency of wandering in places I'm not supposed to be yet was perfectly fine in this instance. I still won.
Yes.
So, anyway, according to How Long to Beat, I'm about 75% of the way through the game, guys.
Hmm.
And I'm almost level 40 now. And I'm working on
15 more Shibuya. Levels.
Yeah, right. So I'm in Shibuya now. That's the last place that I went to. And also, guys, I found a new dick demon. You know how like Mara was level 94? Well, I found a new dick demon, and I can make this guy like now. So basically, instead of being just like his entire body is devoted to being a penis, his where his head would be is a head of a penis.
Yeah.
And he's got hair coming off. I don't even know.
In a very, very uncomfortable way. maybe this guy just got out of the shower, you know?
So its name is Misha Guji. If anybody wants to go Google that, do it in an incognito window and not at work.
Put it up on the projector. You linked this in Twitch chat while I was streaming over the weekend, and I wanted to put it up on screen. That is still loaded as an asset in XSplit for me. So, like, if I want to punish the chat, I can just put that up now.
That's nice. Well, I'm also strolling around town right now with another special boy called Samyaza. And that's what he looks like. He's got a bunch of eyeballs everywhere. Some kiss looking spiky shoes and spikes all over his everything, and
like a classic like deviled ham can tail.
Yeah. So anyway,
nary a dick to be seen though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, he's
know.
Facing away, like, from the camera.
Yeah, it's away from the camera.
Yeah, that's right.
Totally not. And do you notice like the shape of where his ass is looks like the Batman symbol?
It so does.
It's the Batman symbol. It is butt crack.
Yeah.
So Phil, bat I have butt. To, I think, yeah, bat crack is what he put. Bat crack. So go look up Samyaza, and yeah, you'll see that. Also in an incognito window because of the butt crack.
Just
but
assume,
anyway.
Just assume incognito.
Yeah, just assume because it's this game. So anyway, I may have also just unintentionally brought doom down upon the world because, you know, this is I'm a very trusting JRPG protagonist. So I was listening to a nun that just happens to look identical to the black samurai who was already crucified and resurrected herself. And anyway, so like, she told me to go rescue these guys, these naked men wearing masks that are in a demon's domain somewhere. And I went and I did that. And one of the demons, you know, was like, but it'll mean doom if you bring this guy, you know, release this guy. And I did anyway. because that's my only option to progress the game.
Right.
So
there's already so much Doom. Like, what's a little bit more?
Yeah. So I'm bringing Doom upon the world because of a nun. I don't have a whole. I say I don't have a whole lot to say about it. Not about the story. I'm not going to talk about that. It's serviceable without standing out in any particular ways other than the ones that I have just commented. Mostly, it's like the demons are really the highlight, and the gameplay itself is you know fun to do. Like the merging of the demons and stuff is fun, but like the story, is there. So it actually basically it makes me want to go play a Persona game instead because
because it's more relatable.
I prefer the Persona style of gameplay overall as well. More than that, I also just like, you know, the narrative. It seems like it has more narrative than this one. I think too, like if I played a Shin Megami Tensei game that just stood out in some way instead of this one, it would be better. But I've been told that this is kind of like, it's the serviceable title that has like ease of use things to it for the gameplay. So, you know, like I don't have any complaints. It's just, it's there. It's definitely scratching like the dungeon crawler itch that I had.
Yeah.
Like I'm definitely getting that. And I don't feel like, why am I playing this? Like I did with Mind Zero, because like I am enjoying elements of the game, primarily the demon fusion and all of that is really the things that I have fun with more than anything else. But, I kind of pride myself on some of the demons I've made, just because not like because, oh, I made Samyaza and he's like bat crack. No, just because of the skills that they have. So basically sometimes though, I find that I can't fuse a new demon because, the two that I have to fuse together in my roster are ones that I've raised up since they were little and they have all the best skills and they've been fused several times. And so like, you know, you only have what, eight, I don't know how many slots it is, eight or something slots for skills. And if you have two badass demons that have all the best skills and then you merge those two together, you lose half of those skills in the fusion process.
Yeah.
So like, there are some that I'm holding out and waiting until I can fuse it with something that I just acquired that only has a couple of skills, you know, that way I don't have to sacrifice as much. But anyway, like with the ones that I get that, you know, I find out in the world and I befriend them, you know, through talking to them or whatever, in battle, I find that if you can let them kind of marinate it on your bench for a while, like they will gain levels because all the demons that are not in your active party still get experience. Just I think it's just not as much.
That's good. Yeah.
So that being the case, you can just kind of leave some of the demons, you know, sitting there and they will gain levels and then unlock all of their skills. And then once they've unlocked those skills, then you can fuse them together and then they're more worthwhile because they have special skills that, you know, they had to work to open. Like say for example, I had a chupacabra, okay, and it's really weak nut. It's classified as a food demon.
Now, I think you're thinking of the chalupacabra.
Yes, exactly. I was about to say, like, if I had a chalupacabra, we might be in business, but yeah. I don't know about eating a chupacabra.
So
anyway, it has spirit drain and life drain, and both of those are good skills. Well, I let it sit on the bench gaining XP, and then it unlocked energy drain, which pulls both hit points and MP simultaneously, and I gave that to my main character, and that's really useful because I have all the best skills, and you know, every time that one of the demons shares skills with me, which happens, I guess, whenever they gain a certain number of levels. I don't know exactly what the trigger is for it, but they gain a certain number of levels or they get a new skill or something, and then they do a demon whisper, and then they can give you any of the skills that they have, except for the ambient ones, like you know, things that just buff them or something. You can't get any of those, but actual active skills you can pick up.
Yeah.
And if you already have one of the skills, like say you have the healing skill, and then the demon has the healing skill, it buffs yours up with a plus one. So it makes yours more powerful. So the more demons you have the same skill as you, and the longer that you keep that skill, the more powerful it becomes. And then eventually, not only does it get stronger, but it also costs less magic to use. So, so anyway, like energy drain, though, that's a really good skill. And my guy had spirit drain before. So when Chupacabra got to that level and got energy drain, I was able to give it to my main guy. Mm-hmm. And now I can fuse my Chupacabra with something else and then give energy drain to the new fused demon. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. And like if I had just fused it right away, I would have only gotten, you know, drain hit points or drain magic, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know? So... but yeah, like in Persona, to kind of contrast how this works versus Persona, in Persona, there's a lot more complexity to the fusion system. In this game, in Shin Megami Tensei 4, you can fuse two demons together, and some of the special fusions take three demons. I haven't come across any that take more than three. But in Persona 4, you can fuse, I think, up to four personas at a time, and there are special fusions which take up to six personas.
Good God.
And yeah, and like I think you have a set number of personas you can have in Persona 4 Golden. Like you can have, I want to say it's like, if it's not six, it's like seven or eight. It's not very many. But in Shin Megami Tensei, you can expand your bench, if you will, and carry more demons with you up to a point. Mm-hmm. Like right now, I've got 14 slots for demons, but I still have more slots I could unlock if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But so anyway, like in Persona, the fusions can be made any number of different ways because there's so many different demons that you can use. You know, and you can fuse so many different demons at the same time.
Well, you have so many characters to mess with, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And in Shin Megami Tensei 4, though, some of the demons that you come across can literally only be fused out of two very specific demons or found in like this one area. And you have to either go there and recruit them or fuse them from those specific two demons. Because, like, I think I was looking up Mishaguji, the dick demon, and, yeah, it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, it's only these two demons or something like that. I don't know if it was that one or if it was another one, but there was some demon that I wanted to make, and it's just a very specific fusion, and I have two demons that I have raised up from Littlins that, and those are the ones that will fuse to make the new demon, yeah. And it's, like, I don't want to do that because I don't want to lose all those skills.
No, you know? No.
So
you need to find a way to kind of arc those skills away from them.
Yeah. So anyway, like I'm proud of myself though, guys, because I've only put this game down one time so far and I've gotten so far in it. You know how I like get stuck in a genre kick already? Like you already know about that, obviously. Uh-huh. And I always keep like one title of the newest kick on deck, and then I play other random games along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was on a shooter kick, and then Visinovs, and now it's JRPGs. Because I bet, like, when did it start? Was it Final Fantasy Tactics that started this?
That probably would have been it, I think.
Because I played that one, and then I played Persona 4, and now I'm playing this one. Did I play another one in between there? I don't know. Well, I started Octopath, but I haven't. I'll get back to that whenever I can afford to buy it.
No.
But I'm so proud. I think it's safe to say that I've gotten over my grumping about JRPG-ishness, at least to a certain extent, because well, you haven't heard me complain as much about it lately.
you have found ways to launder JRPG into your sensibilities, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Have you, forgive me if this is a question that I should know the answer to. Have you played or fucked with Pokemon at all before?
Yes.
You have. Okay. Yes. Is this scratching a Pokemon itch for you or is it something different?
It's a different kind of thing.
Okay.
It's not really so much collect them all. In my case, it's more like fuse them and make them have all the cool powers that I want them to do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just, like the, you're talking about optimizing your team and building it up to, you know, just be able to chew through anything that comes at it. That is the exciting part of Pokemon to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there's elements of that too, you know, as well. But I still kind of consider it to be its own little. It seems more like a more complex version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have all the skills that you have to deal with and all of that. So.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Cool. Well, I was going to ask anything else, but you said that's it. So.
Yeah.
I will do mine. Go ahead.
And as we mentioned, Jala shares everything up front of what she's going to talk about, and that was it.
This is true.
That's right. Everybody knows. Everybody's on the same page on this show.
Yep.
Should be.
Yeah, so I have not been playing an awful lot because of the aforementioned move kind of things. Fingers crossed, by the time this episode comes out, I will have a definite closing date on my home, which will be nice.
Yay.
The appraisal is supposed to come back tomorrow. However, I did stream Amnesia: The Dark Descent over the weekend, or the first two-thirds of Amnesia: The Dark Descent. I don't know that I have an awful lot to say about that because it's a game that I've kind of talked to death, and it is such a huge pillar that, you know, it just, I don't know what more there is to add aside from just offering the personal reflection that it is still a very good and exhilarating game, even if you know kind of exactly what the boundaries are for what is safe and what is not safe.
Mm. Like, everybody was excited about storage.
Yes. Storage is definitely one of those areas that is like it's a real kick to the kidneys, especially compared to a lot of the things that came before it, just in terms of the way that how aggressive the monster is and how low the visibility is in that area. Storage, it's interesting, right? Because I don't know that I would sit down and play this game. I played so many times before without an audience. With an audience, there is something that happens where, you know, you want to talk through what's going through your head, right? Offer commentary, talk people through your decision-making process or why you're going over here, or summarize where you're at in a puzzle, you know, things like that. In a game where you can round a corner and you'll hear the crazy high pitch of the monster coming at you, it all of a sudden just completely derails your train of thought, and like all that you can do, and understand that I desperately don't want to be a person who streams horror games and screams, but like I find myself going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, as I run, in a way that I would not be speaking out loud if I was playing it by myself. So yeah. There's something about the act of just like, okay, I am giving people a direct line to my internal commentary as I externalize it. It's like, oh yeah, my internal commentary is, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, even in these moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it is to celebrate and go, fuck yes. Like if I get through a door, like at the very last minute before something gets me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting because kind of a running theme with stuff for Hexcrank, especially Hexcrank Live, is like, oh, I just kind of don't get scared at games anymore. I wish I could feel things. And you know, it is nice to, you know, to discover and use the kind of shared experience, to bring that forward in a way that, you know, kind of surprises me.
Well, and then too, I don't know if it's like this for you, but for me, it can also be a thing where because you are conscious of the other people watching you and you are already self-conscious from that, that pulls you away from the stuff that you already know enough that it gets a little bit scarier because you're mm-hmm. not paying as much. Cause, you know, like you're trying to talk to the people in the Twitch chat and you are trying to read what they're talking about, which, you know, your chat was going off the rails all over the place this weekend.
As it does.
It was quite alive and quite popping this mm-hmm. weekend. But, you know, doing that kind of a thing while you're also trying to play the game. So, like, then you get caught unawares a little bit easier as well. So mm-hmm. it makes it actually a little bit easier to have those moments unless you have just played it so much that you're just like, okay, whatever. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, with the Silent Hill game, you're like, okay, whatever. I've played this so much that there's no.
Yeah, there's not an awful lot waiting for me.
Yeah.
So Amnesia, still a good game. Like, surprising no one. Go ahead.
How far did you get in it in the stream?
So I just got through the prison and I got through storage. I'm like, I'm up to the final hub. So my next area is going to be the church and the torture chambers and stuff. So like, I'm going to beat it in my next session. Okay. Like I got to the room where Agrippa is.
Okay. Cool.
Have you played it?
I've played part of it, but I've only played like the first 2 hours of it, I think.
Yeah. So I'm most of the way through it.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. See, like when I played it, I talked about it on here and mm-hmm. I got through the first part and then I don't know. I just set it down. I just stopped playing it for some reason and wandered off as I do, but I never picked it back up. See, it's a lot easier for me to pick games back up again if they're on a mobile device. If they are not, you notice the adherence to actually finishing games on these mobile devices versus like if it's on Steam. If it's on Steam, I may never get back to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you have to go to a fucking oven to play these games. Yeah.
Yeah. Once it's cooler, maybe I'll actually go back and finish some stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So that's really it for me, aside from moving stuff and personal project stuff. Yeah.
Yay.
How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I wanted to throw unbutton. I wanted to throw one shout out to Dennis. Last week he guided me through. I restarted a No Man's Sky game, mm-hmm. and I got off the initial planet, but he sherpered me through that. So
good,
yay!
If I play that more, I'll talk about that later. But yeah,
cool. I'm curious. Yep. Okay, now that we've unbuttoned hastily, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Please.
Properly buttons.
The credit. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you, Ben and Jala, for hopping on tonight. Yeah. So you know the usual stuff you can do. Admin section is kind of pro forma at this point. Programming note, I'm going to be... So I guess we're going to be here next week. My home buying stuff shouldn't mess with that at all. Something that will end up being the case is like maybe September. Last week is September. Let's say there's not going to be an episode unless, other people want to assemble something. I will leave that up to you. Okay. But just want to lay it out for everybody that, yeah, we're expecting to miss one. We don't like doing that, but shrug. It's hard to work around it. Otherwise, though, you can come back every week. If you want to get access to these episodes early, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. They usually go up on Wednesdays or failing that early on Thursday. I try and get those up for people. You can join us in the Slack, which is where some of the responses on this week's multiplayer came from. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Jala-chan in places.
I am Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got some for me?
I only got two.
Okay.
I got Come and Pet My Goat, and I got All Business.
I like All Business. Okay, Jala?
I have Pasta Diazepine.
Yep, okay.
A Medium Place for Medium People.
Okay.
And Chalupa Cabra. I was going to say it if That's you weren't. So.
Yeah.
I like Chalupa Cabra as well. So I had Pasta Diazepine and Chalupa Cabra. I also have Just Assume Incognito.
Okay.
Oh wait, we lost Jala. What's happening?
Oh no. Are you still there?
I'm adding her back on.
Okay.
There she is. Okay.
I don't want to hear the last titles.
The other one I had outside of pasitidazepine and chupacabra is just assume incognito. The votes are equal. I like chupacabra because we both thought of it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Ben?
Yeah, I'm
Yeah.
good with that.
Okay. Chupacabra it is.
Woohoo.
Cool. Well,
Goodbye for real this time.
okay, take care, everybody. Bye.
All right. See you guys.
See ya. Feel better, Ben.
Thanks, man.
Yep. Bye.